How do we arm ourselves for victory in the cosmic battle that we've been talking about? Hello, welcome. This is Good Word. I am Dave Thomas, your host. This is a commentary, usually involving a number of people. I'm happy today to have conversation partners again, Paul Dibdol and John Dibdol, two colleagues whose opinions I have been appreciating and admiring, and I hope those of you who have been listening have been enjoying it. I'm glad they're with me for this quarter. And gentlemen, we have talked a lot in preceding weeks about the conflict between good and evil, how it has a cosmic and supernatural dimension, how that affects human life. I thought that the comments we had last week were particularly gripping in that they forced upon my mind anyway, not that I was disbelieving, but I mean, it brought back to mind a very powerful way the fact that the cosmic battle is real, that the devil is real, and that the effects on human life are real. At the same time, there's a victory that's to be had in Jesus, and that's a very comforting and happy thing. But the question that comes for us today is, how do we arm ourselves for spiritual battle? And I think the author of this lesson focused primarily on that scene described by Paul about putting on the armor of God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we could work our way down through that. The armor, of course, is a very valuable thing in war, in a battle. Paul in Ephesians said, "We wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers." And while it's true that conversion breaks the power of sin in a person's life, it does not remove the converted person from the presence of evil or the activity of the devil. And so, what comments might we have about the armor that is available or offered to Christians? And Paul goes down there. I think you've seen artist depictions of perhaps a Roman soldier with these various elements. And I don't know that I want to work my way down through each one individually. I wonder if there is one that maybe you would particularly like to make mention of, either one of you.
Actually, with that nice lead-in, I don't want to get us off track here, but the phrase you quoted just a bit ago, to me, is one that I wish I remembered more clearly all the time. And that is when Paul says, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against spiritual forces of evil." And I know that far too often when I feel like there's some kind of conflict or disagreement with some other person, or they're behaving in a way that I think is inappropriate or whatever, I tend to focus on that fault as being the person somehow, and it changes my attitude toward that person. It becomes difficult to love that person or to have any kind of sympathy for that person. They are the enemy. And this passage, for me, is really important. And as I said, I wish I remembered it more. And that is that my battle, my struggle, is not against them as a person, but it's the devil, who may be working through them, may be influencing them, maybe has broken them in such a way that they're behaving in those ways that are hurtful to me. And if I could remember that, I think I would be able to relate to those people with more compassion and more love, recognizing who the real enemy is. So that's the part of the passage that to me is really, really important. And then we come back to those pieces of armor. Sorry if I got us off.
No, it's good. I'll bookend that, because he did the introductory part. He set the core context, Paul, and what he just said, talking about the cosmic conflict and what's happening. And I would like to skip to the end of the passage in verse 18. It says, "Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and being watchful to this end, with all perseverance and supplication for the saints." So he emphasized about three different words for
prayer. Yeah.
Pray, supplication constantly. And it's kind of like the end of this thing. You've got all these things, armor now, but now what you really got to do is enact it. You know, you got to affect it with prayer and supplication. And I think that's an important part here. Arm for victory, get the context of the conflict, and Jesus is one, and then supplication, pray, persevere in prayer for all saints.
Now, you know, I find that there's a lot of absence of knowledge and a lot of, I don't know. The whole idea of prayer is very nebulous in people's minds, and I wonder if maybe we shouldn't turn this into a discussion about prayer itself. What does prayer do? What should it do? Is there a right way to pray? Is there a wrong way to pray? Because as you point out, this is kind of a summary of Paul saying, arm yourselves with righteousness and the gospel and all these kind of things. But it sounds like what you're saying, John, is that prayer becomes the catalyst that makes those things alive.
The action step that puts those things into practice, yeah.
So what does prayer actually accomplish? What does it do?
Well, I think it does a number of things. Okay. First of all, I would say I think there's a major misunderstanding, because I think for most people, most prayer is a personal wish list.
Give me this, give me that, please.
Please, this, that. Now, not that that's completely wrong, because in the Scripture, there's very practical things where people speak practically. But I think that comes at the end, comes later, comes maybe as a result after we've... To me, prayer is an interaction with God. Is a relational building kind of thing. And you don't dive in right away and say, this is what I need. You may not know what you need. You're asking God for what may not even be good for you. Mm. Prayer starts in a relationship where you listen, where you talk, where you pray. So that's one thing that happens.
But John,
you enter into relationship.
But John, now you're telling us that prayer is dangerous because you are envisioning the possible conflict between the desires of a human being and the will of God.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's why it is dangerous.
And so humans are going to be very reluctant to pray those kind of prayers. I happen to think that's one reason why people don't pray, is because they don't want to find out something that they don't want to find out. You know?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That I once spoke of prayer as a crucible in which the will and the plans of humanity are put, and they are mixed, they are ground up together with the will of God.
That's right.
Okay, and that can be a very painful process. It's much easier to say, Lord, I need food, and I need this, and I need that, rather than to see prayer as a place where your will encounters the will of God, and you wrestle until God wins. I mean, that's basically what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I would go with that.
Ellen White says one of the several definitions of prayer that she gives, the one that I especially like, prayer is the opening of the heart to God as to a friend.
Yeah.
And to me, that speaks of the kind of, well, obviously openness and a kind of vulnerability. If I'm really going to open my heart to God, that's kind of a dangerous thing, although there's a sense in which you can see that anyway. But it's not just me talking at God, not just me giving God orders about what I want him to do in my life. But it's sort of laying myself bare before him, and that gives God then, I think, the opportunity to change me, not just me telling, you know, well, trying to change God through what I pray.
Yeah.
Well, and again, it depends a whole lot on the context.
Yeah, but
I mean, prayer. If you talk to a friend, you talk to a friend in times of joy. You talk to him in times of sorrow. You talk to him in times of need. You talk to him in any kind of situation.
And what do you do when you're praying like that and you find out that your will is contrary to the will of God? I mean, is God going to run over you?
You're faced with a choice.
But is he going to run over you and just kind of trump you like a monster truck?
God is patient, isn't he?
Yeah.
And gentle.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's doing that. He may come back again and again and again, hoping that you'll come to understanding.
Yeah.
I've seen this happen many, many times in experiments I've done in class. I have a Jesus lab and have people pray for healing for something. Let them pick what they want to pray for a whole quarter, pray. And then partway through, I tell them to be quiet and listen to see what God might want to say to them. And what I find out is by the end of the quarter, the request has, in most cases, changed. because they realized that what they were originally asking
was not
the best thing for them or was really God's will, and they come to see God's will more, and they feel happier with the solution, even though it's not the solution that they originally prayed for because they were dictating the solution.
Yeah. And see, I wanted to come back to this idea of prayer as listening because, you know, that may be the most challenging dynamic of prayer, where you're actually saying to God, now, God, you know, I need righteousness, I need this, I need all these armaments, but that's what I think I need, but now I'm going to listen. What might you hear? See, what might you hear? But what you said is very helpful, I think, too, Paul, is that we're not talking here about an enemy. You're asking a friend.
That's right.
You're in dialogue with a God. And I love those portions in the Old Testament that even point out that when God stands in judgment, most often it is for judgment to be found in favor of the saints, not against them.
It's not a criminal case. It's a civil case in which our lawyer is advocating for us.
Yeah.
So God is a defender of the weak, you know, not
a... Yeah. Yeah. And that's the ideal Old Testament view of the judge, the defender of the weak, and one intervening on behalf of his people with those who have.
Yeah. So by the process of prayer, these elements that Paul talks about here in Ephesians, they become established in a person's life, whether it be righteousness or the gospel. What else did he talk
truth.
About here? Peace.
Truth,
yeah.
Peace.
Yeah.
Helmet of salvation, all these things. Shield of
faith. Sword of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Wow, very interesting.
And we kind of touched on it with the prayer already, but it's not just individual prayer or prayer just focused on me and my issues, but there's a corporate element here too. Keep on praying for all the saints. So as we pray, we're praying for others, and I think we can trust that others are praying for us as well.
Yeah. That's interesting.
There's strength in that.
Yeah, that's interesting because I've actually heard of people who are going through a difficult experience where a community of believers is praying for them, and they will tell you that they almost feel carried along by something that's unseen, that in spite of their adversity, they are not weighed down by their adversity as if they were struggling by themselves.
I can testify to the truth of that.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think it means, pray, not to stop praying, John? We only have a few seconds left here. Any quick answer to that? What does it mean to pray without ceasing?
It's been interesting to see that there are a lot of people who have suggested ways to do that, and there are some interesting ways.
Yeah. What do you think about it being an attitude of openness toward God that you maintain?
Openness, turning your mind toward God. Somebody said every time you look at your watch, think of God.
Yeah. So it's not that I have to kneel down and never get off my knees, right?
That's right. No.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, gentlemen, thank you. I'm glad that discussion kind of adjusted itself to a very pertinent topic, and hopefully the commentary might be helpful. Praying is indeed dangerous, but it's a good danger. So thank you, Paul and John, and to Chad Oftahar, our program engineer, we thank him. Next week we'll be back to talk about the church. Thanks for listening in for Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.